It's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly, brought to you by Nichols Real Estate, your coastal Alabama real estate expert since 1976. Your host is retired U.S. Naval Intelligence Officer Deke Cox. Good morning, Deke.
Good morning, Lori. How are you?
Great, thank you. Happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday. Beautiful day here in Fairhope. Hey, folks, welcome back. Hope you guys are having a great week and had a great Mardi Gras, you know, here on the Eastern Shore. Always a good family time. We're going to get right to it today because we've got a couple of segments, one of them a lengthy segment. But the first one we're going to talk about is an interview with Dr. David Martin, medical doctor in Virginia, former staffer there at University of Charlottesville. And he, you may have recognized him from his testimony, you know, at the EU Parliament and at various other places over the last 4 or 5 years. He actually, you know, heads up a group called MCAM International. That's his company. And what's most important about Dr. Martin is that through MCAM International, he's got full visibility on patenting, international patenting, and he has broken several insights into COVID and, you know, the vaccines especially, and the corruption that exists there and the lies that have been told by government and companies like Moderna and Pfizer and others, you know, to the American people, to the people worldwide. And we're going to play a segment for you where it was an interview, recent interview he just gave. You can see the whole thing on Rumble if you just look up Dr. David Martin or David Martin. And where he's talking about breadcrumbs, and it's important that we understand, just like when we talk about the trans agenda and LGBTQ, and we played, you know, Jennifer Bielik's piece a couple weeks ago, that it's very, very important that we stop and we take a look at the other distractions that have been put in front of us, you know, to keep our eyes off of the real crime that's happening in front of us. And so we're going to go ahead and play this quick segment for you before we jump into our longer segment.
Let's unpack the 5G thing, because that's something that I've tried to encourage people to look at actual 5G data. Anybody who wants to believe that 5G is a new phenomenon that somehow or another proliferated across the globe somewhere in 2018 and 2019, when the United States Department of Defense sold the frequency, needs to go back and look at the underlying fact, which is the U.S. Department of Defense has had 5G all over the world for years and has found it to be not sufficient for their requirements, which is why they sold it commercially. And as much as people say, well, but 5G just started, no, it didn't. 5G was sold as unusable spectrum by the Department of Defense. And carriers bought it, not from the FCC, not from an authorized auction. They bought it from the unused frequency that the DoD was giving up. So even the 5G narrative falls apart on its face because we are pretending like because it went into civilian use, it hadn't been used before. I think the whole thing has been very well orchestrated to set a number of little breadcrumbs out there to allow anybody anywhere to go, it's this, it's that, it's something else. And all of them distract from the central problem. And the central problem is a colluding set of conspirators in both public sector and in industry, knew by 2015, and Peter Daszak, by the way, said it outright, we are going to get the public to understand the need for a medical countermeasure such as a pan-coronavirus vaccine. We need the media to create hype. We need to use that hype to our advantage to get to the real issues. Investors will respond if they see profit at the end of the process. The media hype was a programmed hype. And during the entirety of COVID, what did we have? We had the breadcrumb of 5G. We had the breadcrumb of SARS-CoV-2. We had the breadcrumb of UFOs. We had the breadcrumb of transgender. We had the breadcrumb of men can have babies. We had the breadcrumb of BLM. Are you kidding? This was not some co-emergence of social issues that all came about randomly at the same time. This was a destruction of the public confidence narrative, which allowed everybody to jump on a bandwagon so that nobody talked about the real crime. And the real crime was something which in 2005 unambiguously stated that the synthetic coronavirus was going to be, and I quote, a biological warfare enabling technology. I don't know where the mystery is.
Okay, folks, so there you have it, Dr. David Martin talking about breadcrumbs. And we're going to also jump right into our next segment with Tucker Carlson interviewing Russell Brand right after a word from our sponsors.
You're listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly on WABF 1480. The Conservative Watchdog Show is brought to you by Nichols Real Estate, your coastal Alabama real estate experts since 1976. Locally owned and operated in Daphne by the Nichols family. Over 45 years brings much experience and expertise in any industry, but in real estate, it's invaluable. Experience, understanding of the local market, and savvy. Get to know the Nichols family and their agents at Nichols Real Estate, 6351 Monroe Street in Daphne. Call 626-2030, 626-2030. Nichols Real Estate, your coastal Alabama real estate experts since 1976.
Okay, folks, welcome back. Here next we have Tucker Carlson in his recent interview, episode 70, if you want to look it up on Tucker Carlson Network, X, Rumble, all the socials. It's also on YouTube. And it's this next piece, it runs for the balance of the show here. But it's so very important what Tucker has to say, and most importantly, what Russell Brand has to say. And it goes back to what Dr. Martin was just talking about with the breadcrumbs and, you know, who the hidden hand is. And in Russell Brand's case, what he has to say about his most recent experiences with the British government and the U.S. government, NGOs and the intelligence services, both especially in his case in the U.K., GCHQ and Australia, other places basically working together to try and take him down because of the things that he's saying publicly that run counter to government narratives. And so it's much more than that. It's of course, it's entertaining, but Russell Brand is really kind of evolved into one of the foremost critical thinkers and public voices, you know, that has come out of the last 4 or 5 years of you know, COVID and lockdowns and everything that came with that. And so listen closely, and you might even want to go back and listen to it a second and third time because of just the weight and the import of what it is that Russell Brand has to say here in his interview with Tucker. It's breathtaking when we sit down and we really listen to it thoroughly and deeply think about it, and especially his comments about, you know, where we're going, you know, where are we going with all of this? It's very important. So without further delay, Tucker Carlson interviewing Russell Brand.
Back in September, media outlets around the world, almost all of them here in the West and the English-speaking world, ran headlines that shocked a lot of readers and viewers. Russell Brand, the movie star, the comedian, now the podcaster, was a sex criminal, a bad man, a sex criminal. Now, none of the outlets ran the names of the accusers who had been sexually abused by Russell Brand. That was conspicuously absent. But the judgment was overwhelming. This is a very bad man, and he needs to be taken out of public view for the sake of the rest of us. What was interesting about this is that, in fact, it was the final scene in a long movie that had been playing out for the preceding couple of years outside of public view. This was an attempt to make Russell Brand shut up. Russell Brand has views that diverge from those of most Western governments on big issues, not small things, big issues, questions of economic policy and war and peace. And they decided, we have to make this man be quiet. Why Russell Brand? Well, because in contrast to a lot of us who give our opinions for a living, Russell Brand had the capacity to win people over from the other side. He hadn't spent a life identified with the far right, just the opposite. Russell Brand was a man of the left, and to most people, a cultural figure. Everyone knows who Russell Brand is. And so he had the power, the capacity to persuade. And that was the threat. So we thought it'd be interesting to go through in some detail what happened to Russell Brand. None of this has ever been aired before. The censorship campaign against him began with governments, not private organizations, but governments, their intel services, and their policymakers. And as we said, it played out outside public view. And we thought it would be very interesting and important for people to know what exactly happened. And so to find out, we are now joined by Russell Brand himself, and we're grateful to be. Russell Brand, thank you so much.
Tucker, thanks for having me here.
So I didn't know any, I just want to say I didn't know any of this, and I experienced you because I didn't know you as a viewer. And I remember thinking, boy, that is one of the most articulate critiques of the brand new war in Ukraine I had ever seen. I saw one of your videos on the war in Ukraine, and this was in the winter of 2022, 2 years ago. And you were making kind of a remarkable case, not against the Ukrainian people and certainly not in favor of Russia, but that there might be real implications for the West if we get involved in a war that is not our own. And you I thought, said it so well. What I missed, and I'm now seeing, is that in March of 2022, you were denounced by an organization connected directly to the U.S. government as an agent of Chinese propaganda for your views on Ukraine. So let me just ask you your experience of this. Did you know that you were being attacked as a Chinese propagandist for your views on Ukraine?
I actually didn't, and still at this point struggle to see entirely what the connections are between those two issues and
yes! How
I would develop and cultivate a strong affinity with China. I've never been to China. I don't purport to understand China. Certainly don't advocate for Chinese policy. I've just got a relatively superficial dilettante knowledge of geopolitical matters in the South Asian seas. It's not something that I would like to tie my colours to the mast for or be willing to be publicly shamed, attacked, and even jailed for.
So it happened, though.
Yeah.
And a lot happens on the internet that we miss. But these, in my reading of it, and we haven't, by the way, talked about this off air, but my reading of it is these were the early seeds of a very deceptive plant that flowered more than a year later in September when you were accused of these crimes and demonetized and censored as a result of that. But looking back, so you were accused by a group called Coda Story. It published a story on its anti-disinformation newsletter. Now, Coda Story is connected to the UK government, but it's also connected to the CIA. How does it make you feel to know that you were in the crosshairs of two of the most powerful governments in the world and their intel agencies?
It seems to me ridiculously grandiose to even imagine that I would stir and arouse the interests of such powerful agencies and groups that the British government, if indirectly, would spend considerable sums on observing and de-amplifying content, that true information shared through our platforms in the period of the pandemic was censored, was cited as high risk, that companies like Moderna had spent considerable revenue tracking our content and again de-amplifying it, that Dame Caroline Dynage, whose husband is a psyops expert that worked abroad in terrorism before deploying those methods and techniques and to some degree those teams to observe what they call disinformation and misinformation in the UK. I recognise that the new emergent media spaces present a lot of possibilities, even with your kind compliments about our reporting on the Ukraine. All we've essentially done is listen to brilliant academics talking about the history of NATO and the coup in 2014 in Ukraine and Putin's explicit declaration that he would prefer, let's put it mildly, that Ukraine were not invited into NATO, that some of the regional disputes, how they're escalating tensions. This is information that, because of independent media, is available. And perhaps the function that we, our media organization, have fulfilled has been to collate that information and convey it directly in an accessible manner to give people an alternative perspective than to the homogenized mainstream opinion,
yes,
which amounts to, I've learned over the last few years, the amplification and normalization of the agenda of the powerful, that no opinions can be allowed into that space. And I'm astonished by how jealously it is guarded. There are points in my life where my personal self-regard would have loved the idea that I would be considered important enough to attack on this scale, to spend this amount of revenue and resources on. But I'm now seeing that independent media itself is an extraordinary threat. That independent media inevitably leads to independent politics and independent thought. And we appear to be at some precipitous moment of radical transition. I'm not sure, and I'm not sure if anybody could be sure of where this is all heading, what the exact teleology is. But it seems to be to do with mass centralization, globalization, significant attempts to control the information space that are so rigorously adhered to and protected that even what you might imagine to be a marginal voice is considered a significant enough threat to warrant coordinated media attacks, expenditure on peculiar clandestine non-government organizations and think tanks that take their money from the military-industrial complex, from the legacy media, who, by the way, when they're critiquing independent media, they got skin in the game. They're not able to independently assess your work or my work or the medical opinions of Joe Rogan. They have a vested interest in destroying those organizations. In the last few years, I've learned about the Trusted News Initiative, which has extraordinary connections again to Big Pharma and sets of interest around the reporting on war that have decided and determined that they are no longer competing with one another. You, in particular, come from a journalistic background where it would have been commonplace for the great institutions of American media to compete with one another for scoops, the New York Times versus the World. Those days are gone. It explicitly states on the Trusted News Initiative website, we are no longer in competition with one another. We have to curtail and stamp out, I think it even uses the word choke, independent media. And it's clear that there are now sets of globalist organizations funded by government, but also corporations that are making deliberate, profound attempts to shut down any dissent in an astonishingly aggressive way. And to be sort of caught up in it is terrifying on one level, absolutely terrifying, particularly due to the nature of allegations that I faced, but also revealing. More importantly, it's revealing about the way that I believe the world, and in particular this space, will be affected and the way these events will continue to unfold in the coming years.
What I love about your critique is that you're coming to all of this pretty cold, since you had a midlife career change. You're doing something very different from what you did 15 years ago. And I'm wondering if your assumptions haven't been completely blown up. You're a British citizen, lived in the country most of your life. How strange is it to know that your tax dollars are being used against you by your government, which they are? And how bewildering is it to find that the open contest of ideas that we were promised here in the West, may the best idea win, is a sham?
Yes, it's a, well, I suppose I went into the entertainment industry really with the giddy trajectory that propels a lot of people into those spaces, believing that there might be some fulfillment, and certainly there would be excitement. And when I was a denizen of that world, I was fostered and adored and celebrated and facilitated and lived the kind of lifestyle which I think is kind of common for people in that area, for single people, in my case, drug and alcohol free, but certainly with an appetite for a promiscuous lifestyle. When I was part of it, I found it empty and unfulfilling, of course, as it would be, as anyone who's had those kind of experiences ultimately realizes. When I departed it, as a result really of various spiritual crises or commercial failures or a combination of those events, I really felt like a coming home to the type of values that I grew up with. I grew up in a normal blue-collar town, Grays, kind of like a place that's like New Jersey, I guess, a kind of suburban, outside of the city, normal people, good values kind of place. And what I feel like happened is, like, well, since I've had a family, since, you know, I've got a young son, I've got a couple of daughters, is I feel like that I was able to deploy the skills learned through working in entertainment as a man in recovery in a new space. And what simply began with myself and my partners is tell the truth about things you care about. Kind of over time, it began to, I spoke to Glenn Greenwald the other day, and he goes, you know, you shouldn't be surprised that if you attack the most powerful interests in the world, the deep state, powerful corporations, the machinery of war, that you yourself are the recipient of attacks. Why is that surprising to you?
I know,
but because sometimes it does feel speculative, doesn't it? You're talking about these really powerful organizations and the way that it's funded and the way that it crosses over and their malfeasant, underhanded, insidious activity. And then as it starts to become more popular, as more and more people realize that it's actually true, as more and more people become willing to take back control in their own lives, as more and more people refuse to consent to being treated in this sort of infantile way, having their autonomy and personal and mental and spiritual freedom undermined, their connection to their land undermined, their connection to nature devoided, you start to realize that you're actually operating in quite a powerful territory. That while power is very serious and it has to work very hard to maintain its grip, so these organizations, did it surprise me to find that the British government, through the Department of Culture and Media and Sport, the very people that sponsored the new rather draconian online safety bill personally contacted at the height of these allegations and attacks on me, that contacted social media platforms and asked if I would be demonetized. But they're the body that regulates them. They have the ability to fine those organizations. They're the very person who is sponsoring the online security bill.
Pause for a second, just to make sure I understand what you're saying. So these accusations appeared. There were, I don't know if this has changed, but at the time, there were no names attached at all. You were accused anonymously of committing crimes. And then your own government, which you pay for,
yes,
reached out without telling you to online service providers and media organizations and said, please kick him off and censor him and take his money away. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's
right. Before any kind of trial, any proof that you were guilty, before any names were attached. That happened.
Yeah, and it's the same people that are sponsoring online safety bills, which amount to facilitating further censorship.
But what a betrayal by your own government.
Well, it's astonishing if you regard your government to be in a position of service rather than a position of domination and control. But what's become apparent in recent years is what the nature of our relationship with government is, that they are there to rule and control and dominate. And whilst they may now do it with an aesthetic of care and with the language of inclusivity, I believe the threat of authoritarianism is far, far greater from those that use the language of liberalism than these emergent, somewhat nationalistically oriented populist movements present, because they are leveraging that power now. They're interested in censorship, they're militarizing the police force, they're introducing protest laws, they're introducing censorship laws. Through their actions, we can observe them. Through their fruits, can we know them? We can see what they'd. And if you try to dissent, if you try to oppose even what I consider to be a relatively marginal scale, then the consequences are severe and immediate and robust and terrifying.
I think what makes your specific case so compelling is that if they could do it to you, a person who had the admiration of a lot of people who weren't interested in politics and was pretty famous and had some means, et cetera, then the average person stands no chance against these forces. So with that, if you don't mind, can we get specific about a couple of things that you mentioned? The first is Moderna, which is a drug company. It's part of Big Pharma. Tell us how you intersected with pharma and with Moderna and what you think they did to you.
During the pandemic period, we reported continually about some of the clinical trials that Moderna conducted and whether or not they ought be deemed sufficiently rigorous to warrant the level of measures that were being implemented, if not entirely mandated. We talked about a government official called Jonathan Van Tam, who was the public face of the government, saying, you know, we should be taking vaccines, recommending that the measures escalate. Jonathan Van Tam subsequently took a position at Moderna. We reported on that. People within the FDA took positions at Moderna. We reported on that. We accurately reported that both Pfizer and Moderna were making $1,000, like a second or a minute. Just like we reported accurately and thoroughly about the degree to which Big Pharma were profiting from a situation in which Albert Baller explicitly said it would be inhumane to profit from this global crisis. This meant that we were tracked by agencies employed by Moderna. They had, like us, on a high-risk category. This is the reporting of Li Fang on his Substack. Not just me, Jay Bhattacharya, Michael Schellenberger, Alex Berenson, a number of what you might call anti-pandemic measures voices or strong critics of the way that the pandemic unfolded were under observation by agencies that were either funded by Big Pharma, sometimes the government. And in a sense, what I've started to realize, Tucker, is this cartilage between the state and the corporate world is often provided by these unusual organizations that are claiming to be observing disinformation or monitoring, but they're actually crushing dissent. That's what they're doing in practice. Dissenting voices are being aggressively crushed by almost any means necessary. That media organizations are collaborated in a way that is unprecedented in order to shut down dissenting voices. And it appears to me that this is part of something. I don't know that we've seen anything like this before.
So what you're saying is that these organizations, which purport to be independent, are not actually independent from government. They merely give government, the politicians and the intel agencies especially, some plausible deniability, some distance
yes.
from what they're doing. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying that, Tucker. That seems to be the function. There's a group called Logically, and Logically have received millions of pounds of taxpayer money. And what they do is observe dissenting voices around, in particular, COVID and pandemic measures. But they are now working in the United States, apparently in order to regard misinformation around election campaigning. It seems that this group received government money in order to control online spaces.
So if you're worried about the security of electronic voting machines or absentee ballots,
yes.
who are denounced by these people and
yes.
censored by them.
That's precisely how it works. And of course, they employ former FBI agents, CIA agents. In a way, I suppose, what happened during the pandemic period, because of like the Twitter files, for example, we started to learn the degree to which the deep state were involved in social media companies, the degree to which they were censoring and shutting down information, information that we now know to be true, which it was, you know, of course, you'll be aware that Mark Zuckerberg said we did censor true information. The category, in fact, of malinformation is information that's true, but harmful to the agenda of
yes.
the powerful. Well, it seems like groups like Logically and the Public Good Project are specifically empowered to control, censor, de-amplify information that is harmful to that agenda.
This seems totalitarian.
Yeah.
To control what people are allowed to think is, I think that's the definition of it.
What I've started to, I suppose that's what, in essence, what I've started to feel and report on consistently, as you noted at the beginning of this. I'm not someone who's affiliated organically with conservatism or what you might regard as right-wing politics, although I, of course, recognize the legitimacy of a whole variety of political views and the right of people to hold different views
yes.
from one another. But it seems to me that authoritarianism now is being deliberately veiled in the insidious language of care, concern, safety, and convenience. It seems to me that we're in a time where we lurch from one crisis to another, that the crisis is always used to legitimize certain solutions, and a docile or terrified public is willing to participate in the proposed solutions that usually involve giving up their freedom. We are continually being invited to give up our freedom in exchange for safety or convenience. And it seems that this process is radically escalating. And I feel that this is something that we will see yet more of in the coming year. I feel like, you know, you've spoken publicly about this, that we're potentially on the precipice of serious, and to use your term, a hot war with Russia. And like that's being reported on in my country right now. It's like we're being prepped, groomed, primed for war is coming. That we're being kept in a state of constant anxiety in order to induce compliance. That the ongoing stoking of cultural tension is to ensure that people don't begin to recognize that actually we have far more in common with one another than we do with these curious sets of establishment interests that seem to be transcendent of national democracy. To be explicit, I'm talking about organizations like the WHO, NATO, the WEF,
yes.
and their astonishing influence. Added to that, the types of groups we've discussed already that have been exposed due to Li Fang's reporting, these think tanks and apparently independent organizations who are not independent when you look at where they get their money, big pharma or the government or the military industrial complex or the kind of people they employ. People from deep state agencies such as the FBI and CIA that have extraordinary affinity with the legacy media and their ongoing agenda. So what I suppose I'm sensing is that totalitarianism now will not bear the inflections or aesthetics of the 20th century militarism, guys in medals with mustaches thumping their fists on a desk. We'll be calmly told by gentlemen with beautifully coiffured hair or elegantly speaking ladies that just for our safety and just for our convenience, we will be returning to our homes. And anyone that has an audience or a base or an ability to communicate with people to disrupt those types of narratives will be identified and destroyed.
Well, they're certainly, they've identified you and they're trying to destroy you in the most obvious way, in a way that hurts not just you, but your family. Was there ever a moment when this happened in September where you thought, you know, it's just kind of not worth it to be doing what I'm doing? This is so painful and so threatening to my family that maybe I just bow out and stop talking.